Radio. You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Is your pet stressed out? Does your pet need annual vaccines? Which pet is best for a child? Would you know if your dog was in pain? Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor, where you'll learn everything about keeping your pet healthy and happy. From pet care, pet meds and grooming, to pet food, pet insurance and dental care, this is the place to find out everything there is to know about pet wellness. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets, because it's your pet. Health matters. Please welcome your Pet Doctor host, veterinary media consultant and veterinarian, Dr. Bernadine Cruz.
The devotion that pets feel for their human guardians is often called unconditional love. As pet guardians, we share our lives with creatures that sadly have shorter lifespans than ours. And at times, we must demonstrate the ultimate gift of love, allowing our pets to pass. This decision is fraught with angst. How do you know it's time? Do you permit your pets to transition naturally, or do you enable the process? Is it best done at home or at your veterinarian's office? How do you tell your children? Are you overreacting by feeling so devastated by their loss? And are your friends correct when they say, get over it, go out and get another one, it's just a pet? Dr. Liz Fernandez addresses these questions and more with her book, Sacred Gifts of a Short Life. Each pet is different. Each decision regarding their transition is unique. There's no right or wrong answer, only the one that's meaningful for you. Dr. Liz and her remarkable book will help you no matter if you're facing the passage of a pet, a human loved one, or your own mortality. We'll be right back after this short break.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
Yuppie Puppy City Kitty provides pet lovers an opportunity to earn up to 50% commission selling our premium pet products. Advocate Gina Brick says, the opportunity to share such a quality product line with other pet lovers is amazing. The support of the Yuppie Puppy City Kitty family while working the business is a true gift. Mention special code PETLIFE when you enroll today and receive 3 additional products free. Find us at www.ypckpets.com. That's ypckpets.com.
It's hard to find time for your furry family member. That's where Camp Bow Wow comes in. All-day play and overnight camp, daycare and boarding for dogs. Everything is included. Large play areas for fun and exercise. Spacious cabins, comfy cots, even live camper cams to watch from a computer or smartphone. Camp Bow Wow offers the best care and is the place to go where a dog can be a dog. For locations and more information, visit campbowwow.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in and we'll see you now.
Dr. Liz Fernandez, I have to admit, you are definitely a favorite of mine because, number one, you're a classmate of mine from UC Davis.
Absolutely.
And I am just so enthralled by your book. I was very fortunate to be able to read one of your early forms of the book and was very much touched by it. Before we get into the book, give us a little bit of a background. So number one, yes, you are a classmate of mine.
Yes. And background on me?
Yes.
Okay. So yes, we graduated in 1982 and I started practicing in just general practice and then started very early on within a year doing emergency work. And after that, did that for many, many years, probably 25 years or so, and decided that it was time to maybe transition into something a little less chaotic and hectic and stressful on one's body. And so I was very interested in Chinese medicine and started to take coursework in that, and I'm certified in Chinese acupuncture, herbs, food therapy, Tui Na, which is the body work. And so have been doing that in a house call practice for the last 10 plus years. So I've had a lot of time to, a lot of my patients are elderly, patients being the animals and the clients being maybe they're elderly and maybe they're not. But in any case, the patients are typically elderly. And so I have dealt a lot with end-of-life issues and very intimately, since I see them typically weekly for treatment or every other week or something like that. So that's kind of where the book kind of came from.
What's so interesting about veterinary medicine in general is that it allows you to go in all these different directions. And our classmates have done a little bit of everything. And I don't think anyone else has really gone as you have so deeply into Chinese medicine and getting into the subject of that transition of life. And that's an area I think so many people don't want to talk about. It seems as though there are some cultures, I had the opportunity to go to China, and it's part of life. But here in the United States, Western societies, it's like, we don't even talk about it. Do you have a will together? It's like, oh no, I dare not even talk about doing a will because that's like putting the bad jujus on me that yes, it's going to come to fruition. It's like, yes, it is going to one of these days. Why do you think that's so?
Well, I think that our Western medical model has been successful in so many ways, and as medical professionals, you know, it's considered a failure to have a patient die, and yet, guess what? That's what happens to each and every one of our patients. So it's a failure for the patient too, because it's all about, you know, fighting and winning, and so we've created by our languaging a situation that creates distance from this aspect of life, because it's not separate from life. Death is a part of life. Birth is a part of life. Death is a part of life. So, you know, I guess it's something that's not necessarily easy to see the upside of it, but there is a sacredness to it, to death itself. It can have a peaceful aspect to it. It can bring peace. And certainly I know, you know, we've all had situations where we can recognize the gracefulness and the fact that now someone is no longer suffering, whether that be a pet or a person that may have suffered quite, you know, dramatically and traumatically for some time. But even in other situations, it's just a part of life. It's a part of, it enters us into an aspect of being that is formless. On my website, I have love as formlessness. And, you know, death is as much a formless love as physical form. So there's something that remains after death. And you don't have to believe in God or not. I don't want to, you know, go into that one way or another. But there's still something there, just like love is, you don't need to have a form to feel love. Or you don't need to have love in form to feel it.
You're also, you know, saying that, yes, you know, we are so divorced from death and it's this win aspect and fighting aspect. And I see so many of my clients sometimes who just, you ask a silly question like, where does milk come from? And it's like, well, milk comes from the grocery store and the dairy aisle. It's like, well, you do realize it comes from cows and why they're making milk, and it's part of lactation and the birthing process. Like, oh, they're not like chickens that just, you know, lay eggs all the time. It's like, not really. So I think we're so divorced from the farm that death, which was part of the farm and part of this is why you're there, that death may be of the vegetable matter that you pull out of the ground or the chicken that is going to be part of your dinner. We just don't see that any longer.
Right. We're very separated from parts of the earth. And I think that creates a lot of issues.
I like the title of your book, Sacred Gifts of a Short Life. I don't know if people think of it. What are these sacred gifts you're talking about?
Well, first of all, the question, I love that that's the question. And actually, I'm not trying to point out A, B, C, 1, 2, 3, that we have these are the gifts and that's all they are, but to entertain the idea and ask that of yourself, what could those be? And start to look at that, you know, from your own perspective. But certainly just, again, looking at death itself, they force us to engage with this aspect of life. And we may not like it, we may not think that that's a gift, and yet I've had so many people describe the process and the journey that they take with their, you know, loved ones, whether it's human or furry animal, pets, that they find that there's this amazing connection and amazing bond that is still there. And there's just especially when you're in a grieving process or when death, you know, someone very close to you has just died, there's this space that we move into that is profound, and it's devastating, but there is a sacredness to just being in that space. And that, I think, is really where that the title came from for me. But it goes way beyond that, and it can, you know, take on any, you know, there is no, again, right or wrong to what those sacred gifts are. They're infinite. And but just engaging with death itself, that's, I think, probably the most important thing that they allow us to do, and to be able to start to see it and not be so scared of it. Because the more we understand something, the less we're afraid of it.
I know in the introduction to your book, you're mentioning death cafes and death being redesigned. It's a topic now here in California, where you and I are based, that now it is, will be legal for an MD to assist in a human's passing. And talk a little bit about how these death cafes have come about and how people are now finally beginning to talk about it. Why do you think it's now that people are beginning to talk about something like death?
Well, I suspect, and I have to admit that I've never actually participated in one officially, but certainly have had, you know, conversations with friends, which is basically all they are, about death. But I think that, you know, we are the baby boomers, and guess what? You know, we're now at that age where we are starting to look more and more at that. If we haven't, certainly our parents are getting to that age, if not already passed. And we ourselves are, you know, getting to a point where, you know, there are people in close to us, the same age as us, even younger than us, that have died. And so
when we were young, we thought we'd be dead by now. I mean, wow. Anybody in their 60s is, you know, they're in the grave, folks.
Yeah.
And now
yeah.
I look at myself, and yes, I'm in my 60s, and I go, huh, all right,
yeah.
Got some aches and pains, but I still have a lot of time ahead of me, I think.
Exactly.
I hope.
Yeah. Yeah, and at the same time, we may be living a healthier lifestyle at this age, which is wonderful, but we still are quite aware that, you know, this is an age where there are many that don't even live to this point. So I don't know, I guess at that point, you know, that we're just more aware of it because it's coming up on our heels and we can't deny it anymore. You know, we're past that age of youth and thinking that we're going to live forever.
With pets and the impermanence of pets, so many times clients will say, as we're broaching the subject of we may need to make some serious decisions, the question that always comes up, is my pet suffering? If it's suffering, it seems to be, it's a no-brainer. My pet is suffering. I don't want that. I'll try to control the pain when I can't control the pain any longer. It's time to let it pass. But pain isn't always the benchmark. How do you approach that?
Well, first of all, one of the things that I share in the book and that I truly, truly believe is that each and every one of us have the ability to tap into something within us that will help us make the decision in the moment with our particular pet. It's not the veterinarian's position or decision. It's actually the client and the patient. And they together, I firmly believe, can make this decision, can make it in the most loving and compassionate way. And we are here, we as veterinarians are here to assist them with the, you know, the basic knowledge, the, you know, yes, there is something else that we can do and that they don't have to be in the pain that they're in right now and, you know, that sort of thing. To give options and to give, you know, recommendations and our own personal experience. But again, as I often say to my clients, you know, oftentimes their animal didn't read the textbook. So what my experience for this particular process is may not be what's happening with their pet. And so we need to look at that. We need to look at that directly. So I always ask them, do you think that they're suffering? And then if they say, well, I'm not sure, so then we ask, you know, are they eating? Are they, do they cry? Are they panting? All of these different things. And obviously I'm there to be able to look at the animal also and the pet and see what's going on. And, you know, if I push on their belly and they wince and they tense up and everything, then that's maybe something that they didn't recognize, the client didn't recognize, that I can say, that's tenderness, that's pain.
Now, but doctor, it's still purring. Doesn't that mean that it's happy?
Well, it could be, but it also purring can be a sign of discomfort or stress too. So we have to look at the whole situation. And what one recommendation that I might make in one situation, I may make a different recommendation, or we may come up to a different decision in another situation. And sometimes animals just, they are really trying. They still have a desire, whether they're in pain or not. It's kind of like Granny, you know, she may be have aches and pains all the time. And yet if you ask her, she's like, yeah, no, I still want to be here, you know. So just because they're painful, they may be still wanting to enjoy, whether that's just a pet on the head or whether that's a dinner every night or whatever it is. So it's never easy. And that's why in the book I encourage us to really learn how to listen deeply within. Because if we're listening deeply, we're going to know in that situation, in that moment, what wants to happen. And we have to be able to get quiet enough to be able to access that wisdom that's within us. We have to be experienced enough accessing it that we trust it and then move from there. And so in the book I have inquiries at the end of every chapter that kind of help us to do that. And one thing that can be very helpful is either being mindful or meditating or, you know, just kind of accessing that aspect of our lives, which is another thing in Western culture that we just have a tendency not to do. We use our brain and we think all the answers are going to come from our brain, but sometimes we need to use our heart and our gut, you know, that gut feel. And how do you trust that gut feel?
And how do you learn to listen to yourselves? Right now, we're listening to Dr. Liz Fernandez. She's written a awesome book, Sacred Gifts of a Short Life. We'll be right back after this short break and talk a little bit about listening to your inner self, knowing what's right. We'll be right back.
Please have a seat in the waiting room. The doctor will be with you shortly, right after these messages.
My golden retriever, Sundance, is a lot more playful now. She has more pep and energy than I've seen in years.
Tons of energy. Petey is having fun again. He's got a shiny coat and a good, healthy weight.
Molly's been having 4 scoops a day. She pushes her little bowl all the way across the room, emptying every last single crumb. She has slimmed down and gotten this puppy look.
She's got life. She's got energy. She's got stuff to give.
We get asked all the time when we're at shows, how do you get your dog so healthy and shiny and glossy?
DINOVITE.com.
859-428-1000.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
The digestive enzymes that are cooked out of regular dog food.
Stanley will be on Dynavite for the rest of his life.
Just feed your dog right. Use Dynavite. If it's working, don't quit.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
It's designerpetsweaters.com. Hand-knitted designer sweaters for your precious pup or cool cat. Beautiful couture patterns for your pets, including custom-knitted formal wear, casual wear, yachting, and even sports-themed. Many designer pet sweaters include feathered tammy hats, top hats, and a lot of sparkle. Each sweater includes leg loops, front paw sleeves, and leash opening. Visit designerpetsweaters.com to order your four-legged fashions today. Large or small, we fit them all. Designerpetsweaters.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back to The Pet Doctor on Pet Life Radio with Dr. Bernadine Cruz. The doctor is in, and we'll see you now.
Dr. Liz, this is a subject that's not easy. It is one that we all, anyone who's ever owned a pet, sadly, we've lost them, probably have lost many. In your book, The Sacred Gifts of a Short Life, one of the things that you talk about is listening to the wisdom in your body. What do you mean about listening to the wisdom of your body? Because your brain with this particular subject, you're right, you want an answer for it. You know, what's wrong with this pet, doc? And doctors want that also. They want to put a label on it. But you talk about listening to the wisdom of your body. What do you mean?
Well, when you know that something's right, and I'm sure that we've all had that experience where we just know that we know that we know, that is, if at that moment you take an assessment of what how you feel inside, okay, there's going to be a peacefulness, a calmness, an alignment. It's kind of like everything is flowing, and there's no resistance within you. And it's very subtle, and most of us don't pay attention to that. So that's what I'm talking about. When there's resistance, when there's, you know, a tenseness, when someone says, do you want to do this? And there's a part of you that's like, no. And then you go, sure. If you stop in that moment and you feel what's going on in your body, there's going to be tenseness somewhere, probably in your gut, when you're asked a question like that, you know. And so somewhere, and it may take form in your facial muscles or in your hands, they might clench, or your feet might, your toes might clench, or there may be some subtle clenching that is indicating a resistance. And again, it can be very subtle. So that's where it's helpful to become practiced in taking time to check in, see how you're feeling in your body, just the physical sensations of your body. Don't tell the story about what you're feeling. Just like, ooh, all of a sudden I feel my heart pounding, or I feel my lips are pursed, or, you know, anything. And just become more alert and aware of those things. That's how you start to understand, and you allow your body to help you make decisions, because those reactions are reactions to the truth of what's happening in that moment. Our brain will tell us stories that override that, and sometimes those reactions are so quick that we just totally miss them. And that probably happens more often than not.
Our brain is getting so much input from friends, family, from maybe the veterinarian also, about best. Or if you're thinking, all right, I do believe in my gut that I need to allow this pet to pass, but your friends are going, oh no, you know, that's not the right time. Oh no. How do people work with the decision of this is what's right for me, even though, and right for my pet, even though I'm getting this pushback from well-meaning people, oh, no, 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 you know, I had a pet and it was this situation, or I had a friend and I kept going, and if you euthanize this pet, you're a bad person.
Yeah. First of all, I get beyond the idea of, you know, judgment. And basically what I tell people, and I have told them, I say, look, you know, it's okay if they have an opinion. But if it doesn't feel right to you, then it's okay, and you need to follow your own voice because it's your decision. And regardless of what that is, in the book I talk about one client who made a decision not to do a surgery that even I and her allopathic veterinarian were both recommending. And she just, for a lot of reasons, and I do kind of go into it in the book, but it just wasn't right for her. And I honored her for being so clear and being able to listen to herself and to be able to make that decision and be okay with it. And never did I want to make her feel wrong. It's just that, you know, look, this is what we can do, and it's a reasonable approach. But she just was not, that's just not what she wanted to do. And she spent, I mean, she loved this dog. And she had a history with another dog that she went in a very different direction with. And you just have to let other people have their opinions and still just do what feels right. And you'll know. And not that she didn't ever question herself. I know that she did, because she would come and ask me again, so what's this and what's this? And then she'd think about it some more, and it would be like, nope, this is still what I want to do. So she certainly, you know, didn't just make a decision and never kind of open herself up to other options. You know, she continually, because this was a journey of about a year and a half, continually reevaluated things. But each time when she would do that, she still came to the same conclusion. And I don't know what more a person can do. You know, I mean, if it's right for you, it's right for you. And if it's not, then don't do it. And that was the ultimate advice that I gave her. Follow what's right for you.
And Dr. Fernandez, I think that's really very interesting too, because we've both been in situations, being a veterinarian as many years as we've had, where you'll have a client who, with a previous pet, did absolutely everything. And now when maybe the situation is somewhat similar, they go, no, I've done that before and it's not right for this pet, or I didn't do it for the other pet, but I think it's right. So each situation seems to be extremely unique, and the decisions that you make for that pet is really looking at the big picture, maybe where you are and what's going on in your life, what's right for you and what's right for them.
Right, right. In fact, I just had a conversation with another client of mine, and she had done, you know, again, pretty much everything possible. And she's got a young dog right now. It's about a year old and quite a handful. And she said, I'm not doing that this time. And you know, and with absolute certainty. And I said, you know, I totally understand where you're coming from. And absolutely what your previous experiences are going to inform what you do. However, leave space open, you know, leave space open to know that as time goes on, things may happen with this particular dog that make you want to reevaluate how you're thinking about it right now. So I encourage people not to make dogmatic future decisions based on what's happened in the past, but to allow their previous experiences to inform what happens and just be open to the moment, because that's the most important thing. She said, oh, absolutely, yeah. So it forces us to live in the unknown a bit, because we don't know exactly what's going to happen, and we like to, and that's why we make these ideas. But if it doesn't feel right down the road, then all of a sudden you have this conflict within yourself. Whereas if you just say, well, this is kind of how I'm leaning, let's see what happens, then there's no reason to have to feel like you've somehow done something that's inconsistent with a belief system that you've created, because you haven't created any belief system.
You mention it in your book, Sacred Gifts of a Short Life, when you have a family situation. We're talking about, you know, the individual making the decision, but oftentimes there's a family involved and there may be children, and the thought of losing their favorite pet is devastating. They've never lost a pet before. Or you have two people involved co-owning this particular dog or a cat or a horse, and they're not coming from the same place. What are your recommendations? How do you counsel those people?
Yeah, so that can be very, very difficult. With children, I think it's a little bit easier, because if you choose to continue for the sake of the child, then you're going to know that as the adult. You're still making the decision ultimately, and you're letting love lead you, because your love of your child and your love of your pet and the love of that whole family unit, but you're the one that's kind of guiding that. And I think with children, they're much more likely, if they're included in the decision, and then included, I mean explained, and you know, it's okay with them, then I think that's going to be okay. What can be a little bit more difficult is when you have two, you know, like spouses that are, one really doesn't feel like it's appropriate to continue, and the other one does. And again, what I have recommended, and mostly because of a specific circumstance, and I do share this story in the book of a couple where it was clear that the wife was going to make the final decision, and the husband, who, the wife was Buddhist, she did not want to euthanize, she did not believe in that, and so even though the husband felt that, I think if it had been his dog, he would have euthanized the dog, in this case, he didn't, and he did everything that needed to be done to support his wife. And to me, that's simply, again, letting love lead here. He recognized that it was an act of love to acquiesce and allow her, his wife, to make the final decision. And the really loving part was that he still remained engaged and supported her in every way he could, and supported the dog. And for his wife, I think the most important thing that she was able to do was to acknowledge and recognize that this was a deep, deep act of love on the part of her husband. And so it's not about a right or wrong in an objective sense. It's simply a decision that's made from a loving place on all sides. And that was one of the most powerful lessons that I ever learned, was watching this couple, you know, maneuver this, and so honorably and so lovingly.
I think leading with love is a great way of viewing this whole interchange.
Because I know there are times, yes, you may have, a husband, wife, partners trying to make a decision. And there's sometimes you're the friend and you've known this person, this pet, and they make a decision that you might not have made, possibly letting a pet pass prior to when you would have done it. Or maybe you would not have ever thought of euthanizing this pet. Is that the best way for someone to view this, is saying it's your decision and I love you and the decision you've made?
Yeah, I think so. And to be open enough to recognize that, assuming that this is what you're dealing with, and it, certainly that's the situations that I'm dealing with in this book, that you don't have someone who just doesn't care, which unfortunately can happen, but usually in those situations, there are other ways that one might then want to step in and do it in a loving way, nonetheless, So assuming that that the people involved all feel that this is the most loving decision that could be made, then yeah, I think that it's absolutely appropriate to simply be supportive and to recognize that sometimes we don't, we're not going to agree. And yet what I found, and in the stories in the book, I could see where they were coming from and why they would want to, do things in a certain way. I think that that's, even if I still didn't agree, I could see where they were coming from.
One of the hardest decisions is, okay, I realize my pet is dying. It will be passing soon. Do I let it pass naturally or do I intercede? How do you assist in that decision making? Because that is extremely personal. And there are times when maybe the pet's in pain or the quality of life is really very, very poor. And the client says, no, I do not believe in assisted passage, euthanasia. It's going to have to do it on its own, a natural passing. Your views.
Well, in human medicine, this is, pretty much the standard operating procedure, except for, a few states in California coming up to, being able to do something different. But even in all human medicine, there is a degree of pain medication that can be given and is given that takes the excruciating, hopefully most of that excruciating pain away. And certainly there have been situations where that hasn't been possible, and those are the situations that a lot of people feel that, why a lot of people feel that it's important that we have an option of being able to make a choice as to when we end our own lives. So in the situation with animals, what I tell people is, yes, we will try and control all the pain, and I have very few that want them to be painful and suffering in their last weeks or days or minutes, I should say hours or minutes or days. And so I think that most often they just don't want to do it too soon. But I think that there's a way to keep an animal relatively comfortable. And there's also this whole idea of, people, when they see something like agonal breathing, which is the last phase of dying, where the breathing is very erratic and gasping, and we imagine that to be painful or distressful, and we don't necessarily know that it actually is. And
so it's just a body reaction.
It's just a body reaction. Just like when we euthanize an animal, and after the heart has stopped, there can be a gasping or a vocalization, and that is not an indication of pain, and something that we talk about, prior to doing a euthanasia, so that people recognize that, oh, that's just a reflex. There's no pain there. There's no sensation. And I'm not saying that there is or there isn't in these situations just prior to death, but what I would say is that just like childbirth can be excruciatingly painful for a short period of time, birthing into death, if you will, may also have that aspect to it, and it's temporary. And so if we're talking about only in those last really minutes or even hours where there's a difference in breathing or this, that sort of thing, then if we can get there and help them, that's fine. If no one can, then what I suggest to people is just be present and know that it's temporary. And the more present you are, the more calm you are, the calmer they can be. As you help them to release, then they can be in a place that's equally peaceful or as peaceful as possible. So we're not adding to their distress in any way, but instead assisting them in this journey that they're on, birthing.
Liz, these are awesome, awesome words and thoughts, and I think it can really help everyone, no matter, again, if this is a pet that's passing to handle it coming up or in the past, if it's a family member or even ourselves, to know that it's just a transition. The sacred gifts of a short life. If people want to learn more about this, where can they go? Where can they learn about it? Learn about you.
The easiest place would be to go to my website, which is LizFernandezDVM.com.
One word?
And all one word, no punctuation of any sort. And everything that you would want to know about the book and how to get it. And you can actually download the very first chapter for free right now. It should be published. Publication date is officially May 30th. Hopefully it will be out by then.
2016. May 30th, 2016.
Yes, yes.
Perfect. Well, Liz, thank you. This was not an easy subject, but it's one that all of us have faced and will face in the future. So thank you very much for writing this very, very powerful book. You've been listening to Dr. Bernadine Cruz chatting with Dr. Liz Fernandez. Please tune in again next week. We'll have more information on how to make you the best possible pet owner. Thanks for listening.
Pets can be a wonderful addition to your life because they're a member of the family. Keeping them healthy and happy is important. Pet Life Radio presents The Pet Doctor with veterinary media consultant and veterinarian Dr. Bernadine Cruz. Whether you have a dog, cat, reptile, or rabbit, you'll find answers for your pets straight from the vets. The Pet Doctor, on demand every week, only on PetLifeRadio.com.